The glory of friendship is not the outstretched hand, not the kindly smile, nor the joy of companionship. It is a spiritual inspiration that comes to one when you discover that someone else believes in you and is willing to trust you with a friendship. Good morning, everyone. It is good to have you all here on this last Sunday of winter. Or so they say. It is great. I'm Reverend Hank Peirce. I am your sabbatical minister for just one more week. And then Tom. Oh, that's very nice. Wow. Well, I'm gonna say that again. Okay. No. And then Tom is back, and things start moving very fast around here in the next few months. But it is a joy for me to be here. I want to welcome all of you, especially those of you who may be visiting us for the first time. A special welcome to you. Let me invite you to turn your cell phones to church mode. The last thing I want to tell you is that you belong here. You belong here, maybe only for the next hour, though we hope for longer. You belong here, and we are happy to have you with us. Let's turn and greet those who have joined with us for worship this morning. Jolene, do you mind lighting the chalice while I read the words? The words come from C.S. Lewis, who wrote, "Friendship is born at that moment when one person says to another, 'What, you too? I thought I was the only one.'" Will you please rise and join in singing our first hymn? It is in the Silver and Gray Hymnals, number 303. 303, "We Are the Earth, Upright and Proud."
Thank you.
you please remain standing and join in reading the covenant of the church, which is in the order of worship? Love is the spirit of this church, and service is its law. This is our great covenant, to dwell together in peace, to seek the truth in love, and to help one another. And the person ablibbing behind the keyboard today, I think most of you know Julian. It is good to have you back here. All right. I only know him from the 9 o'clock service, but I think most of you know him from a bit further back. Let us open our hearts in prayer. Teacher of us all, we are thankful for those who transmit ancient wisdom, and for all who seek new truth, believing more light is yet to break forth. For those who look upon nature and see order in its variety. For builders, poets, painters, and makers of music who open our eyes and unstop our ears to your beauty surrounding us always. For all who would lead our thoughts beyond what is actual to what is waiting to be realized, that we may move toward fullness of life. For all who bring their knowledge and their love to the service of humanity, providing vision without which we perish. For all who labor to promote the growth of wisdom and knowledge in centers of living and learning, work and worship, that together we may foster the well-being of our family and friends, community and nation, continent and planet, and for your steadfast love. We keep in our prayers this week Katie's brother-in-law, Dwight, and all at Fourth Universalist. We think of our friends and our elders who are ill and awaiting surgery or recovering. We think of all of the accomplishments of our young people. We hold them gently in our hands. May we be learning always from all that we see and do, and from all that happens to us. And if shadows overtake us, may we not dim within ourselves the light that helps others to live. Amen. For all that we have, and all that we are, and all that makes this place what it is, comes from the people here in the pews. With that thought, the offering will now be given and joyfully received. Amen. We have a responsive reading, and I realize you don't do a lot of responsive readings these days. And I believe that the 11 o'clock service, that you all look like folks who would be used to doing responsive readings, that you know how they work. The 9 o'clock folks, not so much. It was a bit of a mess that was going on. It reminded me, when I was growing up, the woman who sat in front of our family pew, her name was Seal Adler. And Seal was always a line ahead of everyone else in with responsive readings and other things, too. So she was always, but anyway, I trust you guys. I trust you guys. Anyway, I will read the bold print. It's number 568 in the back of the silver and gray hymnals. Connections are made slowly. I'll read the bold print if you would respond with the italicized lines. Connections are made slowly. Sometimes they grow underground.
You cannot tell always by looking what is happening.
More than half a tree is spread out in the soil under your feet.
Penetrate quietly as the earthworm that blows no trumpet.
Fight persistently as the creeper that brings down the tree.
Spread like the squash plant that overruns the garden.
Gnaw in the dark and use the sun to make sugar.
Weave real connections, create real nodes, build real houses.
Live a life you can endure, make a love that is loving.
Keep tangling and interweaving and taking more in. A thicket and bramble wilderness to the outside, but to us, interconnected with rabbit runs and burrows and lairs.
Live as if you like yourself, and it may happen.
Reach out, keep reaching out, keep bringing in.
This is how we are going to live for a long time, not always.
For every gardener knows that after the digging, after the planting, after the long season of tending and growth, the harvest comes.
Excellent. Will you please keep those hymnals open? We're going to sing our next hymn. It's number 315, This Old World. Please rise as you are able. 315. I was a teenage atheist. That's how I was raised to be at my home church. It was expected that that we wouldn't believe in God. It was sometimes expressed explicitly, and more often it was just around the edges. So that's what we believed, and that's what I would tell people, I remember in junior high school telling folks this, that I didn't believe in God. As you know, as kids, you'd always talk about what it was you believed, and I shared this, and the look of shock on people's faces. Now, I grew up down in New Bedford and in Fairhaven, and most people there were Roman Catholic. There were maybe Portuguese Roman Catholic or French Canadian Roman Catholic. There were a few Norwegians in there, but the thought of someone who went to church but didn't believe in God was shocking. And it was just shocking. At first, I thought just shocking to the people I told. But then it sort of radiated out throughout the school that soon everybody knew that I didn't believe in God. And people treated me not as if I had a disease, but as if I was a disease. And they had to stop me from spreading. And I remember one day running from members of the school hockey team who wanted to convert me. I mean, that's a nice way of putting it. It will break your heart. My first semester at UMass Amherst, my friend Lisa Bjorklund, who I'd known from going to Star Island, was killed in a car crash. And a number of us who had grown up going to Star with Lisa figured out that we should all, the coming Sunday, go to the little Unitarian church there in town. So six or seven of us went. And during the time of sharing, one of us stood up and said why we were there, that our friend that we knew and love had died, and that as being Unitarian Universalists, this was the place where we wanted to come and be. And then after the service, we went to coffee hour, and we got our cups of coffee and maybe a snack, and no one spoke to us. No one came and talked to us. And as we were, after we finished, we were like, okay, let's get out of here. And as we're leaving, I remember the minister sort of saw that we were leaving this group, and she went, oh, please come back. And I thought to myself, why would any of us come back? It will break your heart. During my first semester at seminary, news reached me that the minister I'd grown up with, who had dedicated my sister and I, the news had come out that he had carried on a number of affairs with women in the congregation. A number of affairs. It ended the ministry of the woman who was serving as that congregation's minister. It split the congregation because people didn't want to deal with that. And when I say the news came out, it came out in the newspaper. It was everywhere. There were lawsuits. It was ugly, and that congregation still suffers around issues of trust and issues of not being able to keep a minister very long. It will break your heart. A history of our denomination, from the time of merger between the Unitarians and the Universalists, the book of history came out, and I knew most of the history, so I was reading it. And then there was a section in there about the folks who put together the Gray Hymnal, the Hymnal Committee, and they said in there, it said that at one point members of the Hymnal Committee went and met with Yoko Ono, and they said, "We would like to include your husband's song Imagine in our hymnal." And she was like, "Oh my gosh, that'd be fantastic. You know, John, none of John's music has ever made it into a hymnal, and that'd be a perfect song for the hymnal. That'd be great, of course." And they said, "Oh, that's great. Now we'd like to change the words." And she said, it's a piece of art, and he's an artist, and he's not here to say yes or no, so I'm going to have to say no." And they went, "Well, okay." And they walked away from it. And when I read that, I was like, "No! Once again, you've let me down." It will break your heart. This church, this faith will break your heart. Now, I want to let you know that there is good news at the end of the sermon. It will come later. And some of you are probably wondering, why is Hank telling us all this bad stuff? And I'm telling this to you so that you can own it, so you can learn from it, so you can get some depth of our faith from understanding that it's not always good. And, I mean, people will, there are sermons written about how great we were and all these great people. You can go off and get t-shirts and coffee mugs that list all these great people who were Unitarian Universalists. But there was bad stuff, too. We could fill a coffee mug and a t-shirt full of creeps and rotten people as well. Now, many of you have come from from other faiths or from no faiths at all, and you've come here. And the reasons that you've come to this church is probably multitudes of reasons why you first started coming to this church. Perhaps you came here because you wanted to give your children a religious education, or because you wanted to find a faith that embraced your values, or you came because you wanted to find a religious home that would welcome gay and lesbian, bisexual, transgender, queer, and questioning folks, or you came for a variety of other reasons, or perhaps you always just were here. But one day you walked in here. Whatever day that was, think back to that day when you first walked into this building. And you came in and you thought, this is great. Everything here is wonderful. We're singing hymns with words that I like, that I like what the minister's saying. We like the music, like the poetry. It's great. And everything is wonderful. And we can talk, ministers can just talk about wonderful things. But I want you to know that there are bad things and bad things are going to happen. I want you to, as much as you own the wonderful things, also to own the bad things. Don't be fooled into thinking that everything in this faith is good and easy and that people have always made the right choices. Because if you think it is all good, when bad things happen, and they will, you will be so shocked that you go, I can't believe those people who I thought were so great, and they're not great. They're imperfect. Just like me. But you don't want to say, maybe you don't want to admit that fact, that there are people here are imperfect like you are. And then you leave and you never return. Now, sometimes you're in a faith community, you're someplace, and things are going wrong, and you kind of go, I need to leave. It's important sometimes to be able to say, I need to leave. I need to vote with my feet and get out of here. Sometimes you need to leave for your own safety or at least your own sanity. But sometimes you need to stay and fight and struggle with that part of our faith that will break your heart. I often talk to teenagers who are heading off to college. And I say, I want you to go and check out the local Unitarian Universalist church, but realize that it's going to be different. Because my first semester of being a minister, the first semester, I remember someone had come back and I was talking to them and they said, I went to this church and it was different from what I had and there was a woman sitting there in a fur coat. How could someone who goes to a Unitarian Universalist church wear a fur coat? Doesn't she know? We've learned all about cruelty and animal cruelty in Sunday school. How can that person wear a fur coat? And I said, we don't know why she's wearing a fur coat. We don't know why she goes there. But maybe the reason why that woman is there is because that church was the only church in town that would bury her gay son. And maybe that's why she's there. And she will eventually perhaps catch on about fur and other stuff. But what's more important is for you to understand that Unitarian Universalist churches and people are different, and they come here for different reasons. People like to think that Unitarian Universalist churches are, we like to say, oh, we're all different, we have this congregational polity. But in our minds, unless you've gone to visit a bunch of different Unitarian Universalist churches, you kind of think, well, they're like us, maybe they drive more Volvos or more Subarus than we do, but we're really all the same. And then you go someplace and you go, oh my gosh, they really are different. Maturity comes in our faith by owning the difficult parts. At a friend's Reformed synagogue during the High Holy Days, where traditionally the passage from the book of Leviticus is read, the one that says, man should not lie with man. Now, in some liberal synagogues, that passage isn't read at all. They've just taken it out because it's just too hard for many people to hear. But at my friend's temple, before that passage is read, the rabbi says this. He says, Leviticus 18:22 is about to be read. If you feel that you are going to be offended by this passage, please stand up. And you know what happens? Everyone in the congregation stands. And they cross their arms in front of them. Now, what they are doing is protesting their tradition. They're not avoiding the difficult parts of their faith. They are dealing with it in a healthy and in a creative way. We can't hide our faults. People think that we can just hide our faults. Well, let's just not talk about that difficult time that happened, and that we won't talk about it, and no one will find out. But you do find out. Some years ago, I went and I interviewed for a position at a church that in the last 25 years, every minister who had stayed there lasted only about 4 years, and then they left. And they didn't just leave that church, they left the ministry, including the interims. There was something in that church, and I found this stuff out, and I was like, what, is that place haunted? Like, what's going on with this church, with this kind of crazy turnover? And I asked their search committee, and they were like, well, what are you talking about? I'm like, what do you mean, what am I talking about? Everyone just leaves. What have you done? What goes on there? And I started doing history, and I thought maybe it was like the church I grew up in. Perhaps there was sexual misconduct, and people didn't trust the ministers, and they started open warfare with the ministers, and I couldn't find anything like that. And finally, I spoke to a friend who had grown up in that church, and he said, oh, yeah, you know, there was a minister there. He was there for almost 20 years, from 1950 to 1969, and he was gay, and everybody in the church knew it, and everybody in the church kept his secret. And they were very proud of the fact that they kept that secret. And then he left. And then the problem started. And I went, that's what it was. Everybody thought they were so noble in holding this guy's secret. And then he left. He retired. Great. And then the next person came in, and people started going, what's this guy's secret? How come I don't know what this guy's secret is? Maybe some people in leadership know what the secret is, and they're not sharing it with me. And soon this whole like ripples of like of mistrust of the minister who's not sharing their secret. At least most ministers are kind of boring, don't have a lot of secrets to share. But they thought like, that minister must have a secret, and the leadership is keeping that secret from me. So all this mistrust that went on and on is built and built and built. The new minister who's there in that church has been there for about 3 years. I wish her a lot of luck. I understand she's doing a good job. So why have I stuck around? That might be a question that you might be wondering. Why have I stuck around? Well, there is that call from God thing that I answered. But also I often feel that it's my job to try and fix things, or at least to talk about difficult events that happened in our church's lives. Now, it might be a generational thing. It might be like a Gen X thing, that my generation, part of our task is to sort of walk behind the baby boomers who had great ideas about creating a new separate culture and doing new things and started to disassemble things and gave up doing stuff and then went off and did something else and that my generation came along. We were like, whoa, we gotta put stuff back together in new ways and try to make these institutions keep moving forward. You know, I mean, and part so much of I think a part of my generation is that putting together, taking old parts and putting together in new ways. You know, even just the music that we sort of grew up with. You know, the sort of the rap and with a lot of samples from different music and sort of put together in new ways, and we're moving forward. And part of my job as a minister of my generation is to try to keep things to going together. You know, taking these spare parts that are left all over the front lawn and put them together and keep them together long enough for the next generation to come along and build something new out of them. It's an interesting idea, you know, this idea of being able to talk about the difficult parts and working on them. And I don't always do it with my own life. I'm much better at talking about it and doing those things with church. It's much harder to acknowledge my own shortcomings, in part because it's hard to do that. It's hard to do that work on yourself until you've become broken, until you realize you've been dragging around suitcases full of negativity and bad history, and it comes to a point where you're no longer strong enough to carry that stuff with you, and you got to put it down and open it up and go, oh, what is this junk in here that I've been carrying with me? And that's true. That's one of the reasons why I've stayed, is to help rebuild the church and help give new directions to this faith that I love. But one of the other reasons is because of the people. One of the reasons why I've stayed in this faith, why I've stayed at church, is because of the people. It's because of my friends. Whether they stayed in church or not, I think of all the great friendships that I met, all the great friends I met at youth conferences. And I think of them, and I think of those folks who knew what it was like to be threatened with conversion by a hockey team. Right? The church is where I first experienced trust. The first job I ever had was as a 13 or 14-year-old, the custodian had gone missing, and they were like, we need someone who can set up chairs and tables for a couple of weeks until we hire a new custodian. And some adult said, I think we can trust that 13-year-old with the keys to this enormous building. And they did. The adults trusted me. That felt good. And then I made friends through that faith, and that felt good. And we built trust. I've stayed here in this faith because this faith is where I met my best friends. It's even where I met my wife. It's even where my parents met. I'm part of a Unitarian Universalist breeding program that I'd like to speak to you about. No. I stayed to make sure that no Unitarian Universalist teen ever went to church and opened up and was ignored. I stayed to make sure that our faith tried to make itself safe from sexual predators and made itself safe for people of color and people who have different life experiences who maybe have been chased by different hockey teams for different reasons. Olympia Brown, who was the first woman ever ordained by a denomination in the United States, she was ordained by the Universalist Church, served in Weymouth and then down in Bridgeport. She did not have an easy go of it, being the first woman minister in the country. But she wrote this. She wrote, "Stand by this faith, work for it, and sacrifice for it. There is nothing in all the world so important as to be loyal to this faith which has placed before us the loftiest ideals, which has comforted us in sorrow, strengthened us for noble duty, and made the world beautiful. Do not demand immediate results, but rejoice that we are worthy to be entrusted with a great message, that you are strong enough to work for a great true principle without counting the costs. Go on finding ever new applications of these truths and new enjoyments of their contemplation, always trusting in the one God which ever lives and loves." I have stayed here in this faith because this place means so much to me. And I hope that it is the same for you. Because the connections that we make nurture us and strengthen us. They hold us up in times of sorrows and celebrate us in times of joy. The church is the people. It's not the building. It's not the denomination. It is the friends whom we commune with, whom we build a life with, who know us and love us even when we aren't our best, but yet still walk together with us. It will break your heart, and it will heal you. And in life, you need to know that both will come. And finally, that is the good news. Amen. Our final hymn is in the teal hymnal, Building a New Way, number 1017. Please rise as you are able and join in singing.
are working to be free of hate and greed and jealousy. We are working to be free. We can feed our every need. We can feed our every need. We can feed our every need. Start with love, that is. We can feed our every need. Peace and freedom is our cry. Peace and freedom is our cry. Peace and freedom is our cry. Without these, the world will die. And freedom is our cry.
Please be seated. Sonia, this is your time. Come.
Do I even need this? Big and loud. I am the campus committee representative on the Tom's Retirement Committee. The campus, the courtyard, this is a working plan of the courtyard that we are displaying after church so we can talk to you about, et cetera. I'm here just to get you excited. This is the courtyard that we are giving and dedicating to the church in his name for his 15 years of service. This courtyard was originally planned as part of the connector, but got bumped because of lack of funds, et cetera. But we were moving forward with it, and Tom, when he saw that we were moving forward with it and got approved by the board, he was like, I'd really love my name on that. It is really our outward reflection to the community of the welcoming attitude of this church, and I think it's no better way to have Tom's name on that for something that he stood for so long. So we're so excited about putting this as part of Tom's retirement. Of course, you've all received letters about asking for donations to this committee. The reality is the plan is dynamic. So based on how much money we get, you know, we'll take out some benches, we'll take out some stuff or whatever. But the reality is that we're just looking to understand based on your donations that we're hoping for from March so that we can start to make plans on, like, how many plants that we can have and that kind of stuff. So we do ask you to, if you've lost your letter like I have, you can go on the website and just click on the button to give to Tom's retirement. Any and all funds are appreciated, but also as we get closer, we'll be looking for sweat equity kind of thing. So if you want to come by afterwards stop by, I'm taking names and stuff like that. So as we get closer on June 3rd, just throwing plants in the ground, we could use you. So let us know. But thank you so much, and hope you guys get excited about this as I am.
Our benediction. Don't walk in front of me, I may not follow. Don't walk behind me, I may not lead. But walk beside me and just be my friend. Our worship is over. Our service begins. Go in peace.